Welcome to Grip Block Foundation's weekly disc golf podcast. I'm Trevor, joined by Connor.
Hey.
We'll be joined by Hunter via the interweb in just a moment. Today we're going to talk about all things Portland Open that just went down. Before we get into any of that, we got a quick word from our sponsor, Manscaped. Fellas, blink if you haven't purchased the Father's Day gift yet. Yeah, you're blinking. Yeah, we thought so. Today's episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Our friends at Manscaped have crafted the total package for his special day. Head over to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with code GRIPLOCKED. Remember that old beard trimmer your dad's been using since you were a kid?
Yes, yep. I do. It's silver.
Yep, it's time for an upgrade. Introducing the face shaver. That's a must have for that smooth finish. The Manscaped Handyman. Powerful and compact, this face shaver isn't just for home use. It's perfect for quick touch-ups on the go. Its precision blades ensure a quick shave every time, making it an essential tool for dad's grooming routine. If your dad prefers rocking a scruffier beard, then the Beard Hedger Pro Kit is the ultimate beard maintenance kit for him. That's like my favorite thing ever.
My dad has a really long beard.
Yeah. This apple didn't fall far from the tree. This all-in-one kit includes the Beard Hedger, Manscaped's most advanced beard trimmer, along with shampoo, conditioner, oil, and balm for his beard. It also comes with a brush, comb, and scissors so he can style his beard and mustache like a true gent. So like I said, you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code GRIPLOCKED. Happy Father's Day from Manscaped. Make sure to get your father a gift. All right. We're going to talk Portland Open, so we're going to toss it over to me and Hunter via the interwebs.
Hey, Hunt.
Yeah, hey, Hunt. How's it going? I'm going to say
hey, will you tell? Will you tell him I said hi?
Yes. I already recorded it, so I can't. Dang it. All right, let's throw it over. All right, so we just had the Portland Open go down this past weekend. Our next Elite Plus event. You know, we love to get our event classifications correct. Did you feel the plus in the air, Hunt?
I did. I could feel it. All over me. It was just electric.
It was just the plus was very apparent.
It was just plussing everywhere.
Yeah, so much plussing. We were over at the Glendevere golf property playing on two different courses, East and West. We'll start with the FPO here. So we had Sophia Donaghy coming in third. We'll talk a little bit more about her because she kind of came out of nowhere. Holland Hanley in second place, and then first place, a name we would not have expected, Paige Pierce, taking it down in pretty dominant fashion. It ended up being only a two-stroke victory, but it really wasn't that close. There was some tomfoolery going on towards the end of that tournament. But Paige Pierce is back. Hunter, just knee-jerk reaction. Like, what's going through your mind?
Well, first off, because I can already hear the Paige fans chirping, right? Because I think literally, like, the last 2 weeks, I've talked about how she didn't have drive. She didn't have passion. She wasn't looking fierce out there. And, you know, this is one of those situations where I am very happy to be wrong, because the FPO field is just better if Paige Pierce is in contention. And, you know, obviously this has already been said on social media all over the place, and it's like people's first go-to is Kristen wasn't in the field. Well, that's fine. Yeah. Whatever. Kristen hasn't been in the field before, and Paige still wasn't winning. And what I really like about this situation is obviously she had a rough start to the season, but she went fifth at OTB and then wins here. So it's not just a one-off, like, flash in the pan. Like, she had gotten better. Like, this is back-to-back good performances where she's trending upwards. And the way she was playing out there, I don't know if it would have mattered, per se, if Kristen was in the field. When Paige Pierce is on, like, she is the best person to consistently beat or at least push Kristen Tatar. So this is great news for FPO, I think, and it's one of those situations where I'm stoked to be wrong, because I didn't think Paige was going to – I didn't think she had dinner. I didn't think this was going to happen, but here we are.
This is like, brutal for my, like, Paige Pierce gaslight narrative, where every time we talk about the GOAT conversation, because we just talked about it on debate night last week, and every time we talk about Kristen versus Paige, I always, like can't quite – like, remove myself from the fact that I feel like Paige is a lot better. Like, I can't decide if she back in 2014 was just playing bad competition. Like, I always feel like she was really good. And then this week, it was like reinforcement of the idea that, like, when Paige Pierce is playing well, she's throwing, her backhand looks untouchable. Like, she's throwing these awesome hyzer flips. She's got great distance. She looks athletic. Her putt looks really well. She doesn't really have the forehand, and I think that's the biggest knock on her game. But, like, when I see Paige Pierce playing at this level, I think to myself, she is as good as anybody. And I was actually surprised. Yeah, I kind of forgot that, like, when Paige when anybody realistically wins and Kristen and Evelyn and them aren't there. That's kind of what the comments do. But like, and that's usually my reaction, but I didn't feel that way at all. Like, when I watched Paige play this tournament,
you can tell when someone's playing, if it's like Kristen would have beat that person. And that's when I can hop on that bandwagon of like, okay, but like Kristen, I'm not hopping on that bandwagon this time. I'm actually going to hop on a different bandwagon. This is my opinion on Paige Kristen, right?
Okay.
I think that Kristen Tatar's ceiling and floor is like this, right? So that's why she's the first ever 1,000 rated FPO player. So this is Kristen's ceiling. I think Paige's ceiling and floor is just bigger. So I think when Paige is at her best, I think she's the best FPO player in the world. She's just not there as consistently as Kristen. So if, so it's if we like, can get her,
it's like the Simon Lazat effect almost.
Exactly. I think if we can get Kristen hot and Paige hot at the same time, I think Paige wins, and I think it's a like absolute bloodbath. But I don't know, Kristen doesn't seem to do good in bloodbaths historically. I feel like when it's a punching match, it doesn't go her way. Like, I feel like Kristen just kind of stomps people out. Maybe that's just a complete wrong opinion, but that's how my gut feels. And Paige has been in a bunch of all-out brawls, and she's done good. So this is a really – if you're a Paige Pierce fan, I think this is a great sign. It's also a great time of the season for her to get going because, like, there's a lot of tournaments coming up that if Paige can play like she just did, you got to like her in them.
Certainly. Yeah, I think it's the narrative – the way it shapes out is because Paige spent all of her dominant era basically battling Katrina and always being in that kind of mindset, whereas Kristen these last few years has just been, she's just been dominating. So, like, she hasn't even been in that scenario as much. But it's really interesting. It's going to be – I'm going to be very curious to see how she moves forward to kind of go over her performance. Yeah, go ahead.
To touch on a point you just made too, I think that Katrina Allen's fall off, almost takes away from Paige Pierce's greatness because Katrina Allen is a much worse player today than she was when Paige and her were battling several years ago. And so when you're watching the today version of Paige and Kat, it's hard to remember how good they were in that like 2014, 15, like all those years. But like if you go back and watch and you just try to do the eye test, it passes the eye test that they would have been very competitive in today's FPO. Like if you copy and paste those two into what we're seeing today, it's just hard because you still see those players in the field and they're just not the same people anymore.
Right. So going over Paige's performance, she started off with a decent round. I remember round one early, she got into the clubhouse tied for the lead and we were kind of like, oh, there's Paige. But then I think Owen came out, fired 7-under and it was like, all right, let's just see what she does with this because she can see the top of the leaderboard. And that isn't always the case. She followed that up with three great rounds, including a hot round in both rounds 2 and 3. Very impressive back-to-back hot rounds. She led the field in C1 in regulation and also strokes gained T to green. Here's an important one. Only threw OB 4 times the entire event. That's only once per round average and was 86% C1X putting for the tournament as well. I believe she only missed one putt. The one thing I do want to ask you is it a coincidence? And, I'll just say, is it a coincidence that Paige, now with OTB coming in fifth and this event winning, that both of these are open courses and this is a course where it's really long and a lot of our longest throwers, being Henna and Evelina especially, are not here right now?
It's not a coincidence. No, I think Paige is always, like, that's always been one of Paige's biggest advantages. Like, we remember when U.S. Women's went to that short technical course a few years ago when Paige was at her prime, like, then it just brought in so many people were able to just catch up to her because like that is one of the advantages she has. And even over Evelina and Henna, like the way Paige throws, I don't know, there's something about her way she gets distance seems a lot more achievable and controllable, especially with that drive in her back. I'm a huge fan of the drive, and watching her throw it, it's like she's never going to miss. But she is better in the open than in the woods, but she's historically done fine in the woods. I mean, she's won Maple Hill. She's won pretty much any tournament you can name. She's won. So I think what's good, and why I was saying I think the stretch is coming up is good, is because we're about to face like Beaver State's relatively open, and then I think we go into like the Idlewild, Des Moines, like that stretch. Mm-hmm. Even Idlewild's not that wooded. Like it's wooded and it can be seen as a technical course, but like there's still plenty of open and distance on it. So like the stretch that she's warming up into is a really good like transition stretch where she's not just going to be like, oh, well, next week she's going to Northwood and it's going to like halt all momentum. Like I think she's getting momentum in a time where it could keep like the – and Kristen isn't going to be back for what, another few weeks? if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So like she could, Paige could pop off if she stays hot and win like three events before Kristen, or two or three events before Kristen shows up. And then Kristen's meeting a full head of steam Paige Pierce. That could be something to watch.
Yeah, very. It's going to be very interesting to watch. I agree. Like I said on, I think it was on debate night as well, where I was like, the best thing that could happen for FPO disc golf right now, the absolute best thing, is Paige Pierce realizing her prime again, getting back in the groove and playing well, because she's super entertaining to watch play disc golf. I thought her post round or post tournament interview was really great. You could tell she was very emotional, and it was really interesting how. And I was hoping she would answer this question, because this is the thing that everybody was dying to know. When Perkins kind of asked her what was different, and she basically just said, I don't know what was different. I just felt like she kind of said, which I think is like, this is the frustrating part about golf, but she said, I've been trying my hardest every single week. I did the same thing. I tried my hardest again, and things just clicked.
Yeah.
And I think that was interesting. Like, that just speaks to this game. And sometimes it's all about things just clicking and finding that magic. And hopefully, and she mentioned this too, she was like, this win is bigger than just this week. It's about what now can I do moving forward? What's the momentum going to be like? And the confidence, knowing that Paige Pierce can still be Paige Pierce. And I thought it was a great interview there at the end.
Yeah, I thought in the interview she said something about like, it came out of her mouth wrong. She corrected herself, but she said something about like, it's not about this win. Like, I don't care about this win. It means nothing. But what she was trying to say is the bigger picture of what led to this win was what you just said of like, my game's back. And I think like coming back from an injury where she was already having a little bit of a down season last year prior to the injury. I think they'd said it was like 380 some days since her last win, which her injury was like a little less than a year ago, I think. So she was already not where she wanted to be. Then the injury happens. Then she comes back, has a rougher start to this season, and coming back from a like serious, serious injury like that, like just learning to trust it again is like a huge hurdle. To me, that's what happened this week. Was not that she hadn't trusted it before, but like she saw what she could do. It's like, I can still do that. And sometimes like you just have to see that to unlock something. Now, we could be saying all of this, and it could be an Ella Hansen situation where we, like, think, oh, this is going to unlock something to Paige, and the next tournament she just is gone again. I don't think so, because, again, it felt like during that interview.
Ella doesn't have 17 majors.
Exactly. It felt like during that interview, that's what Paige was alluding to the whole time, was, like, this huge amount of relief because she believed in herself again, of, like, I can do it. Like, it's nothing's holding me back. And like, that is what I think what's more scary for the FPO field. Cause Paige's done it once, but we've seen her whole career that she can do it a lot more times in a season than just once. So, and to get hot now, I mean, she could pop off so many.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the next tournament, like it's going to be interesting to see, is that pressure that stacks up on her? Like, okay, I'm back on everybody's radar now. Or is there so much confidence and happiness that comes with being able to win again that just moves on from there? One other thing I wanted to mention from the post-round interview that I thought was just, it was interesting to watch, was the advertisement.
I knew exactly where you're going.
That went down.
They also tweeted it too.
And you kind of just like, it's funny, you just mentioned the drive when you were talking about it. But if you didn't see this, so post-round interview, Perkins leads her like maybe. And like, I know her and Perkins are friends. So maybe she even said like, hey, by the way, because like he led her, she's holding the drive, her new signature disc. I'm allowed to advertise it because we sell the disc at foundationdiscs.com. Exactly. But he's like, and this disc here in your hand was a big part of your victory, and just sets her up on a tee to basically be like, she like gives the backstory of the disc, like why the drive, and like, to be fair, I guess, like, I don't, well, no, not even to be fair, it was just a blatant advertisement. And then she like gives it to, I don't, was it her caddy that she
no,
gave it to?
No, it was just a fan that was like loud all day.
Was it just a fan?
She was like appreciative.
I couldn't tell, but she like is like, yeah, this is the drive. I mean, I was just waiting for the, you can pick it up at PaigePierce.com. Yeah. Like, that's all I was missing. What did you think about the ad? And like, I feel like this is it's a hairy one.
Well, let's flip it on its head here. Okay.
Okay.
The Pro Tour is also a retailer. So maybe that's just in the back of their head.
That's a good point.
It would have really driven it home if the Pro Tour had like their DGPT shop or whatever. I think their link is foundationdiscgolf.com. I think it's what it is. But if they would have had like,
something, like that.
I know, something like foundationdisc.com pop up at the bottom and like direct you to their site to shop, that would have been the one thing of like, oh, this is all planned. But I don't know, because the tough part behind it is the – it is obviously free advertisement and it's weird,
mm-hmm.
but there was a whole story behind that disc. So like it was a story moment and it also was something she leaned on.
Right.
If you're Discraft, you're absolutely loving it because like,
oh, are you kidding me? They had to be moving those.
You couldn't spend enough money at the Pro Tour to get a better ad than that. Like, there's nothing they sell.
Yeah.
And if you're anyone else, you're hating it. Well, the dangerous precedent they're setting, though, is Discmania calling and be like, hey, I noticed you gave Paige Pierce a solid 2 minutes to push her latest disc. Why didn't you do that to Gannon Burr? Like, that's a dangerous precedent they're setting.
Well, I was going to say the precedent they're setting now is every winner from now on is going to have a company in the air saying, hey, when you get to that winner's circle, make sure you bring your favorite disc in there.
Yeah, pick your disc.
I would be shocked. Like, I'm genuinely, like, I'm serious about that. Like, if in the next few tournaments, I'd be shocked if I don't see that happen again. Because now not everybody watches those interviews at the end of the day. And I know there's free ads tossed out all the time because – that's just the nature of disc golf and the way that we consume plastic. The disc manufacturer names just get tossed out. And at the end of the day, she did win the tournament. But I would not be shocked to see somebody win and then they're like, yeah, this is the disc that I was relying on right here. Like zoom in on the camera.
That's what the camera was URL. Following that thing.
Yeah, dude. I couldn't believe it. Like I saw it. My mouth was just wide open. I'm like, this is crazy.
The Pro Tour literally tweeted it. They tweeted that clip.
Yeah,
from the
I know. Scandal, man. Under the table advertising. There's got to be something going on there. So one of the most eventful things that happened during Paige's winning run, I wanted to talk about a little bit, is a mandatory situation that happened. I believe it was hole 12.
Somewhere
might be wrong
there.
On that. But basically, there's a ton of mandos on this course. They have to do that to basically keep people from throwing outside of the trees. Since they're on a golf course, they play down like the middle of or in between fairways on the golf course. They're going on small sections of trees, which funny enough is kind of how we've talked about like the future of woods golf is like having openings. In any case, you have a lot of mandos to keep people pinched in. On this hole in particular, if you haven't seen it, you should look it up. But basically you have a tree that I believe has four trunks in total, but it kind of forks basically. You have like two on the left, two on the right. And the mandatory M sign is on the leftmost part of the forked tree pointing left. It's a double mando on this hole. There's one on the other side of the fairway. And then you have the gap in between the fork of the tree, very small, and then the right side of the tree. So Paige Pierce throws her drive. It hits the left part of the rightmost side of the tree, bounces in between the fork, and then goes through. So basically she has gone right of the mandatory sign, but in between the forking of the tree and left of the rightmost part of the tree. Paige feels like it's a miss. They talk to a tournament official and he basically explains to them that the rightmost edge of the tree, the mandatory sign is basically saying this giant forked tree is the mandatory, the rightmost edge. And I believe there's actually a painted line and upwards. That is the part that matters. So by going between the tree, she has actually made the mando. What makes this even better is Paige, you could tell, was super paranoid because of her last mando incident years ago. So she took it so far to say, and I actually really respect this move from Paige because even though the call, once it was explained, seemed straightforward enough, I totally respect her throwing the provisional because it doesn't hurt. And the best part is she then tosses in the provisional from the mando drop from like 200 feet, which was awesome. It was such a like disc doesn't lie situation. But what are your thoughts on the way this whole mando thing played out just in general?
Well, I think it's good that Paige made a three both ways because then this whole situation didn't matter. And realistically, she was going to win, so this whole situation still wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
It would have made it where instead of like a quadruple bogey on the final hole, she might have had a double bogey the final hole or something. But anyways, I think that that's a very stupid rule. I don't think it makes any sense. To me, like, we'll use this Yeti Stanley water bottle. I'll flip it around. No free ads. If this is the mando, right, and my disc goes through here, if you're an audio listener, I'm sorry. Like, that should be a missed mando. To me, like, you have to go this side. Like, that's the way the design is. So, like, if you hit this and drop, you're fine. But the second you pass and it's not on this side, like, that should be a missed mando. Like, that doesn't – because basically the way the official described it, I think he more or less was saying the mando sign is just for decoration or just for looks. But, like, the right side of the tree is the line. But, like, that doesn't make sense to me because in any other situation where, like, a tree isn't split, it's just a solid tree, you can't go through the tree. So in every other situation, it has to go left. And, like, that's the clearest call to make. because with Paige, yeah. they were like, they all were fairly certain that it went through the tree, but like they were discussing it. And it's like, well, none of that yeah. matters if the Mando is just, you have to go left. Like, that's correct. The clearest thing. Because then we don't have to worry about these ticky-tacky, well, did it go through the tree or around the tree? Couldn't really tell. Like, well, did it go left yes. of the tree? No, it's a miss. That's how it should be. This situation doesn't matter, yeah. though.
Yeah, I have no problem with the Mando, obviously, just pointing out what is the mandatory, because obviously you'd have to make very large signs. But it's funny because there's actually a hole just like this at my home course in Pennsylvania that has a forked tree. And I can't tell you how many times I've thrown between that forked tree, and it obviously never counts. It's considered a miss Mando. Cause you're right. You don't want to have to rely on your eyes to tell if that got through or not, especially if it's further than this. Just make it the whole tree. You know, count it for the inside edge. It was a weird one, but I thought it was really funny that she played it from the drop and made it. That was awesome.
I was very surprised. Another player. I was surprised at that ruling. Like, when the guy was explaining it, I didn't believe him. He was explaining it, and I'm like, really? I don't think this guy knows what he's talking about. That's all I was thinking the whole time.
Well, it was in the caddy book, apparently. Yeah. Like, that's how they had it laid out.
I think it's right. It just, when he was describing it, it made, like, so little logical sense to me that I was like, I think this guy didn't know the rules. That's where my head went.
Yeah. But he didn't seem very confident.
I think it's because everyone knew this is really dumb. This isn't what it should be, but this is how it is. So just, like, roll. And
right.
I think the reason Paige went provisional is I think owned from, like, the hot mics, owned still seemed a little, like, I don't know if that's true or not, but he's saying it's, let's just move on. And so I think that, like, Paige did the right thing. You're just like, well, let's just play a provisional. We can speed up and finish the round, and then we can just address it after. And then she threw it in, and it's like, don't even have to address it after. It's just a three.
Yeah, and you know what? If you don't get caught up in those rulings emotionally, then you're gonna stay locked in on your round. Like, she was just trying to move it aside. It was well played. Another player we need to mention taking a podium here is Sophia Donicky. I believe I've got that name pronunciation correct. We have the highest PDGA number to make an elite lead card.
Wow.
She just started playing 3 years ago after playing Ultimate. So an Ultimate player moved to disc golf, just started playing 3 years ago. She shot 13 under in round two, a course record, had 100% fairways hit and 83% C2 in regulation, an absolute clinic out there. What did you think about Sophia's game? I got to watch her quite a bit, obviously, since she made herself moved up onto the lead card. I thought that, like, she looked like a typical Ultimate player to me, where the game is very raw, but you can tell she has good command of the disc and was able to throw a lot of shot shapes. But what were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think with Ultimate players, they're just comfortable. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah. She just kind of looked comfortable out there. Is this her? How many Elite Series events has she played? Like, I didn't have a chance to look into that.
I didn't even get a chance to look either. I'm not sure.
Because obviously this was her best finish. Is this the best Canadian finish ever? I don't know if I saw that stat either. I know
both men's and women's. I'm not sure.
No, because Thomas Gilbert surely won something.
I don't know. Third, though?
But yeah, no, it was regardless, very impressive.
She played OTB, and she took 14th at OTB.
Okay, so that's not even bad.
And also second at Las Vegas Challenge. I'm not sure who else was there, but...
But did she play any, like, last season or two seasons? Or this is, like, she debuted?
So her first season was 2022. Last year she played FPO. No, she did not play any. She played Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship. She must have qualified in, like, an A tier, and she took 33rd.
Okay. So, I mean, for a debut back-to-back events pro tour-wise to go 14th, 3rd, pretty promising
for the future.
I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see her tour more. I think I would assume a hard spot because, like, you're just starting. You don't know how good you're going to be. You probably don't have sponsors that are just, like, paying your way. And you live in Canada. So, like, every time you're coming to the States, it's not like, oh, it's only a 3-hour drive. It's, like, a whole process to go back and forth. So I don't know what the rest of her year is going to look like. But she, you know, probably with a third place finish, if she can just play, like, 4 or 5 more events, she'll probably have a solid chance at least getting to the playoffs and maybe even the Tour Championship, assuming she continues to play really well. And, you know, the FPO field can use as many consistent players as it can get. So if this is another one to the stack, welcome. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she's going to play Beaver State, looks like, so that'll be exciting. I think it just shows you, like, when we get new athletes into the sport, like, it can happen quickly, you know, 2-3 years, and you can be at this level. And I think that's encouraging for all the female players that are continuing to get in the game. Another last shout-out for FPO, Anna Kinstein. Top 3 on the SportsCenter, top 10 for her ace on hole 16.
Oh, wow. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, top third play of the week. And what was awesome was the whoever was the anchor for that particular show got the pronunciation correct.
There we
he had
go.
To correct himself, but got it. And he like had the facts straight, like didn't basically did not patronize disc golf. So that was like nice.
So he didn't call us, what was it, the pickleball? What do you call us? Pickleball of golf the pickleball or something like that? Or badminton golf, or
yeah. The pickleball of golf.
Or the badminton of tennis. I don't remember what he called it.
It was, yeah. Or, yeah, yeah. It might have been the pickleball of tennis.
No, it's pickleball of golf. That's like. How it would make sense, yeah.
Pickleball of golf. Yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, because we almost made shirts of that.
We, yeah.
Probably should have.
Definitely should have. all right, we're going to move on to MPO. MPO was not quite as eventful, and that's for one reason particular we'll get to. So we had Ricky Wysocki in third place, 23 under. Cole Rodallin in second, 25 under. They had a really entertaining battle for second. You know, a lot of cash on the line at these plus events. But Gannon Burr at 33 under won this event very convincingly. So convincingly, in fact, he went wire to wire. And if he stopped playing after round three, he would have won by four strokes. Now, obviously, there wasn't a ton of scoring the last day, but this is disc golf, and scoring at the top of the field is like nobody's shooting over par up there, well, unless you're somebody we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
But an absolute dominant performance. He led in C1 and C2 in regulation, tee to green as well. It was definitely a thrower's course out there, but he also putted 92% C1X, so he was just all around incredible. This was the Gannon Burr. Listen, I think it's been back-to-back times now on preview shows where we've like kind of challenged. First it was Calvin, now Gannon, where we're like, hey, your average really awesome golf isn't good enough. You need to go out and be awesome if you're going to win. And that's exactly what he did. He just went out there and dominated start to finish. He had total command of the disc. He just looked awesome.
Yeah, no, it was – MPO is just something else right now, because now you got AB with three wins. We'll talk about him, I'm sure, in a second. Calvin Heimberg with two, and now Gannon just won the second Elite Plus event. I think the PDGA and their like event recap said he's never lost an Elite Plus event. I think that's what they said. I think everyone he's ever showed up to, he's won. It was on the PDGA's website. They said he's won every Elite Plus event. I know he hasn't.
He may
won
not have been
everyone
in Portland
that,
last
so I
year.
I think I'll say I think he's just missed one or two, but like everyone he's played, he's apparently won. So that's something
love
interesting
it.
To look at. But like,
yeah,
you know what? And now he has the highest average finish and two wins in both Elite Plus events.
Yeah.
And this one, like, he stepped on people's. I called it. I think halfway through round one, him and Eagle were looking real good, and so I just tweeted and said, "My gut's telling me Eagle or Gannon wins this event." And Eagle kind of slowed up. Gannon never did. Like, he just it, in today's field, it is so crazy to dominate the way he did. Because you really, like,
yeah,
if you look at
insane.
His stats, he didn't really have a weak point. Like, yes,
no.
Sure, he was probably, like, what was it, fifth or sixth in C1X putting, but you said 92%. It's just there's, like, three guys
yeah, I mean,
that putted 100%.
Marweed was at 100, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's just, what are you supposed to do? You know, you miss one putt, now nowhere,
right.
You're in fifth place in C1X putting. It's not
yeah.
like you putted bad. And I think he was like 33% C2 putting or something like that. And he was still in like fourth because some guys were throwing in from like 50% or something. But if you're putting that good, you're leading in C1 and C2 in regulation. You're leading, I think, strokes gained, tee to green, something like that. Like, you're just going to win. But to dominate like that, I mean, we just aren't seeing it. But here, we just saw it. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. So the question is he now the front runner in the player of the year?
I was going
to
ask you that.
Having two wins.
I was going to ask
okay.
you that because it's a brain twist.
I don't know.
Because like you have Anthony Barella with three wins, right? And we're big wins guys. But AB just came in 44th place.
You have to take the whole season though, because like the way I think about it is like if the season had just ended, I'm not going to think recency bias. I'm going to just consume the whole season. I'm going to digest that as one product. And who am I taking? In my mind, I still give it to AB. However, it is really close. But I think just when you can't really decide player of the year until all the majors have passed.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a reason we don't do it until then. But the majors throw such a nuance into it, because I'm not going to give out bonus points for plus events. I'm just not.
No.
And when I have to go, I weigh the victories. And when I go 3-2, and it's not like AB's played awful. This event was an interesting one. I would still give it to AB, but he and Calvin now have both tightened it up significantly to where it is certainly anybody's game as we keep moving on.
Well, all signs indicate that all three of those players are still going to have, like, they don't really, I mean, AB obviously had a terrible final round, but all yeah. in all, like, there's, I don't think there's any reason to raise warning signs because, I mean, everyone struggled the final round. I think the conditions were bad. Who knows what happened to him out there? He just had a really rough start and just never get things going again. But
yeah,
all signs in my head point to all three of these players having really good seasons as a whole. So this is probably going to be the most confusing player of the year decision of all time. Because, like,
it's gonna be tight.
If you end up with, you know, Gannon picks up like one or two more wins, and then AB wins a major, and then Calvin wins like two more times, you could have a guy with like five wins, a guy with four wins, and a guy with, you know, four wins and a major. And it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, that would be incredible for the end of the season because like everyone's just going to be going fist to cuffs over who's player of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. And you got to remember too, Simon already has a win. If he were to grab a major, he would all of a sudden be right in there. Yeah, so Gannon's lead in the Pro Tour standings now grows to 120 points, which is also due to the fact that AB imploded in round four, finishing 44th. His first three rounds were solid, and he was just inside the top 20 with a chance to move up and started his round bogey, 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 double, and ended up 8 over par for the round. He threw 9 OB shots in round four, 3 more than anyone else that round. He hit 45% of fairways. I think he was 9 for 22 fairways, and he was just poor all around. I don't know what happened. Somebody on Reddit, now I found this interesting but not quite topical, somebody on Reddit mentioned that they saw his car got broken into, but this was before round one. So, like, what did we? I don't know if he got a new car insurance quote right before round four or something he didn't like. But so that, I don't think that has anything to do with it. My best guess is just he got off to a poor start and it just kind of,
what this,
you know,
seemed,
he got a little tilted maybe.
What this shows me or seemed to tell me is like old AB is still in there. Like he's a killer.
You're just waiting to jump on his back,
I'm
you
not.
Hater.
Well, first off, I predicted it. Secondly, AB, he came out the year hot, right? But, and when you get hot, stay hot. But I think this showed, unless there's an injury. But to me, the thing that says it's not an injury is he started like that, finished the round, and his back nine was cleaner. If there was some type of injury, you would think a DNF would have happened or the back nine would have, like, it wouldn't have got better. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Injury.
Yeah, he hasn't posted.
I think we just hope it's not an injury, because if it's not an injury, then this could just be a fluke. He's right back next week, and we'll get to the end of the year and be like, oh, yeah, I completely forgot he came in 44th that one time. Whatever. But what this seemed to me was he came out the gates probably gunning for a top 10, gunning for maybe even top 5. He was seeing scores coming in and was like, hey, it's not scoring well out there. If I can get a 10 under, I can do something. You know what I mean? And then he gets out on the course, gets a slow start, and it just snowballs. And it's one of those things of like, once he's out of it, then it's just hard to care anymore. I think a lot of players go through that anyways. So that's more how I interpreted it.
It's a lot of rain, too. Yeah. It's kind of miserable out there.
How I interpreted it is just like he got off to a rough start. I didn't see his first few holes. I don't know if they showed it on coverage or not, but like maybe a few breaks didn't go his way. And next thing you know, like he's just not putting the disc where he wants it. And then there you have it. Like that's how I interpreted it, is just a bad round. It's a fluke. It is what it is. But I do think it might show a little glimpse behind that, like, things can still break in there. Maybe not whole 16 European Open break, but like things still can break down.
Well, and you know, we have kind of reserved certain spots in the Pro Tour right now for like those perfect players, those guys who just don't ever really mess up. And at this point, you know, Calvin had a weird hitch, but he had an injury. At this point, Gannon Burr is kind of the only
just
one left,
Gannon.
I feel like, that it's just like, he is the guy right now who is just not going to mess up. It's a tough place to be because at some point you probably are, and then we're going to talk about it. Talking about the parity, though, we had, I just wanted to mention it. At one point during round three, and 45 players and ties make the cut line, but at one point during round three, late in the round, second place was less than 10 strokes from the cut line, which I just thought was insane. Just shows you how bunched up. This tournament would have rocked if Gannon wouldn't have just dominated the way he did. The leaderboard was really great. Some other players to note, Paul McBeth took 7th place. He's continuing to climb in momentum, playing solid golf. That's encouraging to see. Eagle McMahon grabs a top 10. He's really rounding into form right now, so things are looking awesome at the top of the field. Someone who probably was a little disappointed in his performance was the defending champion, Adam Hammes, took 84th place after winning this event just a year ago. I mean, we talked about it on the preview show last week, but I just don't really know. I don't really know much about his game and like where his struggles are, but he just seems to not be able to find it. And I think it must be super, super discouraging taking such a like low finish at an event that you just won. Like, you knew how to win it.
Yeah, well, that's what Edwin Stats emailed me, because he was telling me like the Manufacturer's Cup update was like on his site for us to download or whatever. And he said that he like heard us talk about Jamez, and he decided like he's going to do a player profile on him just to try to get to the bottom of it. And he hadn't completed it yet, or else we'd be talking about it. But he, in his email, basically said like something along the lines like, man, what an enigma he is. Like, I don't understand it. Because, like, you know, he's like, he's shown he can win, like, Portland MVP, but then a weekend like this happens. And it's just like, it can't, to me, there must be something in his game that, like, when it clicks, it makes a bunch of other things click. And when it's off, because, like, maybe it's his putting. Maybe it's as simple as, like, when his circle two putting's on, it lets him throw freer because he knows he doesn't have to put it to 10 feet or whatever. So maybe it's something as simple as that, where like when that's off and he has no confidence there, then he gets like locked up everywhere else, because it's putting well isn't going to all of a sudden, you know, fix you from being 88th to top 10. Like it's more than just that. But what putting does to you mentally, it could be that simple. But who knows? Who knows? Yeah. And I don't know if the stats are going to tell us, because they can't tell you what's going on in your head.
Yeah, and I do get that. I've definitely been there where it's like you throw worse because you think if this is inside of 10 feet, I'm not making it. So maybe that could be part of it. One last thing I want to talk about with Portland, because I don't think you responded to my tweet. So I'm curious to see if you have any. Well, I didn't tweet at you. I'm curious to see if you have a different take than me. Let's talk trophy. My opinion, I think this might be my favorite disc golf trophy yet.
Favorite?
What were your thoughts?
I liked it.
I loved it, because I thought – here, I thought this was the first time, maybe not the first, this is a time where a disc golf tournament decided to add a twist of uniqueness doing the, if you guys didn't see it, it was basically like a custom trophy that doubled as a vase. It was metal, but it had like, I don't know how they get like the color on it like that. It's some of the way they forge it, I guess. But then it was roses, like they put roses in it. And I thought it was awesome because it goes with the logo and the theme of the event, the roses. It's unique in the sense that the bouquet of roses and the trophy itself all by itself looked awesome as well. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it.
They also brought it out on like a base that had the tournament logo and the players like picked it off the base. I really liked it. Yeah, I thought there was nothing wrong with it, because the vase, I couldn't tell if the vase in and of itself said the tournament name or anything, but in my opinion, when it's that nice, it doesn't need to.
Yeah, because, like, it was very nice.
And that's where people get caught up, right? Like, to go back to the chessboard, right? You couldn't go and buy this vase full of roses for $40 at Walmart. And I understand the chessboard was handmade and probably cost someone $15,000 or something, whatever, okay?
Right.
But at the end of the day, I can go buy a chessboard that looks identical for $40. Like, I just bought my wife flowers for like Mother's Day. You're not even getting the roses for $40. Like, that many roses. And
they were big roses, too. They were big old roses.
Like, the roses alone were more expensive than 80% of the trophies people are handing out. And then you add that sick vase. And it just, to me, the telltale sign is like, if you can show someone a picture of them hoisting a trophy and they understand they just won something, and they aren't like, why is that guy holding a steering wheel? Then good trophy. And I think that passes. This passes that eye test.
Yes, it passes the picture test. I was going to say is when I see the picture of Gannon and Paige hoisting up that awesome vase full of roses, I thought it looked like a moment that years to come, it will feel iconic, somebody holding up the roses. Like, I loved it. It just felt so right to me that when I saw, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that is perfect. They nailed it. I thought it was great. So we had to get some trophy talk in there. Because, listen, we will praise the trophies when they're good.
Yeah.
And I love this one.
They could have added a dyed disc to really put it over the edge. But, you know. It is what it is.
That should have been the base of the – there should have been a nice dyed disc in there. That's it for the Portland preview. Thoughts, Hunter?
Yes. Really quick. You mentioned Paul McBeth's momentum. Okay. Pierce is on a momentum track.
Okay.
They could both collide, and at some point we could have a Paul Page win-win tournament, which would just really take you back. You just like
at a major? Could you imagine they tie 18 majors?
Like, you just I mean, really, like, realistically, you gotta like Paul McBeth at Worlds, two courses that he had influence in designing. He's gonna do really well. I have a hard time believing two rounds in New London, someone shoots much better than him, and I think he's gonna be able to hold his own at Ivy. I feel the same way about Paige Pierce. New London, especially from the shorts, is not that technical of a wooded course. It's just like you have massive, you have really wide open wooded fairways that just keep the disc in play. If Paige Pierce is playing good, she's going to do great at Ivy. She could do incredible at New London. Yeah. We could have a Paul Page Worlds win, and then they both are old tied most back. All time.
Old disc golf is back. I will say, like, it was really funny because I've never been, like, a massive Paige Pierce fan, and I've always considered myself a pretty big Kristen fan, but watching Paige Pierce win like that, I felt this sense of pride in, like, the old disc golf ways and being like, yeah, like, this is Paige Pierce, like, the one that we watched back in the day, and it was great. Like, I love it. So,
Other thing I wanted to say is, as the season continues to go on, all eyes on Ricky Wysocki now. I really like.
He's next up.
This was one of the tournaments where I think I called in the preview show, like, this is starting to be the turning point of, like, Ricky's got to get one. You know, he's sick, he's coming in second or third or whatever he came in. Third, but, like, we're 7-year major drought. I don't remember his last Pro Tour win. Was it last year? I mean, he hasn't won one this year, obviously. I don't know when it was last year.
I think he had one Pro Tour win, but I think it was either really early in the season or really late. I feel like it was late because I think he strung it together with that Tour Championship and kind of, like, built his resume at the end of the season.
But, like, for Ricky, like, he is clearly, by his play, still one of the top guys. Okay, but
certainly
he has got to win another major or else he's going to slowly start being forgotten as one of the all-time greats when, like, the beginning of his career trajectory was to be, you know, one of the arguments on Mount Rushmore of disc golf. He's not even in the conversation right now anymore because, like, you can't go in a 7-year major drought. That's important. And then also Pro Tour wins, like, people just keep stacking them in a time when, like, this Ricky, he's not gonna be in his prime forever. Like, when Ricky's playing well, he's got to start capitalizing. So to me, okay, Gannon just got his second. Calvin's popped off now. AB, Paul's heating up. For me, all eyes are on Paul at majors, but whether Paul gets a Pro Tour, if Paul wins a major a season, that's a successful season in my head. Ricky, like, he's got to win for it to be, like, a good season for him, in my opinion. Because if not, then, I don't know, that's just the standard Ricky set. It's too high of a bar. He's got to live up to it.
Well, let me tell you, the last, not counting the Pro Tour Championship, which isn't a Pro Tour event, really, his last Pro Tour victory was at the Preserve almost a year ago at the end of June last year.
Now, right when Calvin got to a year since his last win, he popped off and got two in a row. I'd love it because, I mean, if we can get Ricky winning and now you have Ricky, Calvin, AB, Gannon, then my next one on my list, it's like, all right, time to wake up is Paul and Isaac Robinson.
Roll shoestring.
Oh, no, we're not that far back yet. But, like, Isaac Robinson, I think, is after Ricky of, like, start poking the bear. Isaac, do something. But right now,
and he's been playing well too, but Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to throw it back over to the studio now and get into some trivia.
All right. That was Portland Open.
That was so fun, Trevor.
Did you love that?
I enjoyed every second of that.
Yeah. Did want to do a Manufacturers Cup update because we didn't do it on that, but I've got it right here. Basically, obviously, Gannon Burt racking up a ton of points. Let's see what we got written here from Edwin. Discmania Sky Team all finished in the top 10 for the fourth time in 10 events. That's Burr, Ancela, and Klein. That's insane, by the way. I think we on the mailbag we had like under 2.5 Discmania players top 10. That's a bummer.
That is a bummer.
The only movement in rankings this week was DGA passing MVP for 6th place, driven by Cole Rodal in 2nd place finish and Andrew Marweed getting his 3rd top 10 of 2024. Marweed's kind of putting together a quiet little season. He putts real well. Eagle McMahon gets MVP their first points outside of Simon Lazat with a top 10 finish. That'll be nice for them. Other thing to mention, there was a ton of people that tied for 10th, 5 people including Paul Ulibarri. Shout out Paul. You had Gannon Burr obviously first getting those points for Discmania, and it was pretty spread across the board. But the standings now, we have Discraft still in first place, 285.25 points. Discmania, they did grow. They got 8 points closer, but they're still at 247 points. Innova then at 151. Dynamic at 80. Prodigy at 56, DGA at 47, passing MVP, who is at 36, Westside's at 24.5, shout out Matty O, Casaplas at 23, and then Mintdis at 15. So there you go. There's your Manufacturers Cup update. We are now going to do some trivia. Before we do that, let me talk to you a little bit about something going on at foundationdisc.com right now, and that is a Father's Day sale. We just talked, we talked at the beginning of the show about our Manscaped code or whatever for Father's Day. Well, here's another great Father's Day gift you can get, and that's at foundationdisc.com.
He's going to need a trim and a toss.
That's right.
The two important T's in life.
That's right. You can get up to 15% off the entire site right now if you go to foundationdisc.com and check it out. Perfect Father's Day gift. If he's never played disc golf, time to introduce him to the best sport in the world. And if he does, get him something new to add to his bag. Make sure to check it out. That sale is going to be running from now through Father's Day. But if you want to be that amazing son or daughter, get that disc on time. Order it now. Why not?
Yeah,
have it,
and listen,
have it ready to go. Wrap it with a bow.
If you're watching this, you might be the dad that needs a Father's Day gift.
Hints out there.
Oh, just text the link to your wife.
Yeah, be like, hey, they're doing a Father's Day sale.
Yeah, they're doing a Father's Day sale. Isn't that so cool? Well, I did that, and my wife bought me a T-shirt.
There you go. All right, Trevor's trivia. We got a fun one here.
Okay, I'm scared.
Here's what we're going
to
do.
I don't have Hunter
today
to bail me out.
No, it's fine. I tailored this to you.
I know you did, but it still makes me nervous.
I knew I had.
Sometimes I'm scared you're going to trap me and you're going to try to embarrass
not
me.
Not a trap. So here's the way this game works is we are going to be working with discs, something that
love
you're
discs.
Very skilled at.
It's my favorite part of disc golf, discs.
Yes. I have the PDGA approved discs lists up in front of me, which is, these are always my favorite ones. Basically, the way this works is you're trying to name as many discs as possible. But the rule is every time you name a disc, the next disc you name has to be approved later than that one.
Oh, my
gosh. As far
gosh.
As more recently than that
okay.
one. Okay. So you want to start as early as possible.
Shoot.
And move up as little as
but
possible.
But I don't, do I have to, am I timed?
You have 20 seconds
oh,
per
no.
guess.
Okay,
per
okay,
guess.
Okay, okay.
So each time you guess one, then when I'll look it up. Confirm it, then I'll start a 20-second clock.
Okay.
So you're trying to get as far as many discs you can. So play along if you're listening. This would be a
if
fun
I can
try
get,
and beat Connor.
If I can get 10, I'll be proud of myself.
So obviously, I would.
I know
sure
I should get more.
Could.
I no. I'm trying to set the bar low,
it can be tough,
so
though.
I'm not freaking out.
But obviously, 2024 is the most recent, and you can go all the way back into the early 80s or whatever. So Connor, this is pivotal. I'll start the timer when I announce it. This is pivotal. But what is your very first disc start? This is a very important one.
I believe it's the Arrow, right? The Innova Arrow is
okay.
the one that's really early.
The Innova Arrow is your first disc, and that puts you at June 1st, 1983.
Okay, now.
Okay, your next timer starts now.
The Innova XD.
Okay, immediately fires in the XD. And oh, by the way, you lose if you go backwards in time. That's
yeah,
very important.
I assumed that. My game is over, right?
Yeah. Okay, XD.
XD is also early. That's what made me nervous, but I think the era is before it.
1984, a perfect guess. And you can, I'll go to the month as
wait,
well.
I didn't just lose?
No, we're getting sooner in time. The first one was 83.
Oh, it was 83.
Yeah,
I thought you said 93. Okay.
No, no. And I'll go to the very month as well.
Okay,
I'll be real
that.
Specific. Okay, your next time starts now.
Okay, Connor, let's stay back there.
This is where it's going to start getting interesting.
I think I'm going to go into the classic rock. Not
okay.
that it, we made a big jump there, but
it's tough.
I can't,
you can't
I
hang
can't
around,
mess around
yeah.
there. Yeah,
certain eras are going to be really tough. Okay, classic rock, 94.
Yeah, so it was a big jump, but pretty good. I mean,
okay,
that
still,
10 years.
You know, we're still before 2000. So
yeah, I'm gonna go. Okay,
I don't know.
I'm gonna go with the Discraft Hornet.
Hornet, interesting.
Yeah,
maybe early 2000s here. Is that what you're
I
thinking?
I feel like it might have been 90s. I'm probably wrong about that. Oh, it's bad, isn't it?
2010.
Oh, why'd I stink around like that? Oh, I was just trying to get cheeky.
I would have thought it was like 04, 05.
I know. I really thought that was way earlier. What was I thinking about? Okay, then I'll go. Surely the Wasp came out after the Hornet. Why am I going to Discraft? Something I know nothing about.
You're going with the Wasp?
Yeah, I'm gonna go Wasp.
Okay.
I think it's 2000.
2002. You lose.
Oh, no. Then I think I got the Hornet and the Wasp confused.
I didn't really know. That's so funny. You started out so strong. And I'm going
like
to
name the two right after.
I'm going to have to ask, have Hunter do it next week because he probably won't see.
Yeah,
this one.
You should for sure.
That is a tough game. I knew eventually you'd run into a hiccup. I think going Discraft there.
Yeah.
Was,
well, I think I was trying to stick. I think if you just like play safe and you're like, oh, well, I know the T-Bird, like what order these discs came out with, and not think about I'm trying to guess 1,000 discs. I was trying to stick way too close together, which meant that I was just outside of what my brain was capable of.
There you go. Okay, last thing I wanted to talk about here. So Kristen Tatar, I don't know if you've seen on her socials, but I thought this was really cool. She just signed with a new agency,
okay,
a design agency,
ooh,
and launched an entire rebrand. You may have noticed some of the new discs we have a new Kristen logo on
them.
Don't
they always, though?
I feel like she's done multiple logos. But really, really interesting. I went to their website to check them out and like see everything they're doing for her, and it was really cool. But I wanted to talk about Disc Golf logo power rankings.
Okay.
So I have, I think I have a pretty good image here to pull up that has like, a large section of
you're
them.
You're talking
so
about
you
logos in Disc Golf or manufacturers?
Player logos.
Player logos.
Player
okay.
logos. So
okay.
I've got a really big selection of them in front of you and I.
Yeah.
Obviously the, please exit out of this advertisement, please. There we go. Obviously the KT one down there is no longer valid. So I want you to list your top three of this list, and this is most of the notable ones, and I'll give you mine. I think it's always kind of tough, but I'm interested to see what you say.
Yeah, I think that one of my favorite looking ones, the Yuli one, is a really good looking one, and I think he came out with that before it was super, like before that style of logo was murdered, you know?
He definitely innovated.
He came out before it was beating a dead horse. He came out with that logo. And I like it. I like the Gannon Burr one. I think it's a good looking logo. Came out too late for the style of the logo, in my opinion. I think that
the GB.
Yeah, it looks too much like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be my top three.
Well, AB's logo, I feel like, kind of looks similar, except if you flipped that around and then added a snake tongue to it, right?
Or is this, where's AB's?
It's not on here, but okay. It's a similar vibe.
Yeah. I mean,
I agree with you. I think Yuli's is like, he was one of the first.
Who the frick is that?
I don't even know.
That's sick. Okay, so there's one where it's like a dog, and it's obviously like a G. What does that say?
Is that Colt Montgomery? That might be Colt Montgomery, low-key.
Or is that a Cole Redolent? Or is that CR?
I might need to look. Now I feel like I need to look.
Guys,
it up.
Okay. I'm telling you right now, there's a logo on this list. I realize that not all of you guys can't see this, but there is a logo where it looks like,
it's Cole Montgomery. I am a disc golf legend.
That was amazing.
When he Cole puts it on a hat like that, it looks like Fox Racing.
Yeah, it doesn't look as cool.
That's not
dang,
the right place
it
to
doesn't
put
look
that
as
logo.
Good, yeah. Okay, I'm going to ignore the hat. I'm going to ignore the hat. Just look at the logo. That's got to be one of them.
Okay.
That's a sick logo. You guys need to look up Colton Montgomery's logo. Is really good.
Yeah.
Paul is iconic, but it's
doesn't do
it looks
me.
Really good on a hat, but the logo itself, it's not going to.
I always loved Bearheart. He's not an active player anymore.
Yeah, that's a good. That looks like a Patagonia brand.
Yeah, I think it's pretty on for disc golfers, and just looks great on a disc.
Do you want to know what is like on that list? Legitimately, is like sneaky probably my favorite logo on there.
Let's hear it.
It's the Nico one.
No.
Yeah, I think I really like that logo.
Which is a font with a wing on it.
Exactly. It looks vintage. It like on red on a t-shirt. It looks like the Red Wing logo or the Gold Wing logo.
You just like the wing. I mean, I like the wing, I guess.
Everything aside, I'm thinking about what would look good on a shirt. I really like the Nico logo because it looks like an old Red Wing logo.
Okay. I also really like, I mean, I know I can't give Chris Clemens too much prop because it's just like a lime or a lemon slice or whatever. But
it's
not,
I mean, it's more like
it's
a
fun.
Design. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I would say for me, like Bearheart, I really like. I really like AB's logo. And I kind of agree with you. And I do enjoy Yuli's as well because I think he was like the first one to do that.
Yeah.
I think this is Luke Humphreys that does like the dog.
I was wondering what
that's
that
a
is.
Good time. That's a
it
good
is,
time.
But it didn't tell me anything.
Tells you that he has a dog.
Yeah, but it doesn't tell me who he is.
Yeah.
Paige Pierce is a great logo, I think.
Like the Paige Pierce logo?
I think it's a great logo, yeah. But it's not. I'd still probably not top three. I'm trying to think of marketability as well, not just what looks nice, but also is like a good logo.
What about the Dark Horse?
The Dark Horse is...
Come on, man.
I mean...
Say something about the Dark Horse.
I think the Dark Horse is like a, it's obviously iconic, so it did its job really well, and like you know what it is immediately. It's not like,
does it need an update?
I would say it needs some kind of simpler version update. To me, I'm not like a huge wear a Dark Horse logo on something.
Well, you haven't seen the Naked Horse then.
Let me see the Naked Horse. Show me the Naked Horse.
It's just the same thing without the wings.
I like that better.
Oh.
Yeah.
Big Naked Horse guy.
Because technically this is a Pegasus.
Yeah, we learned that. We learned the clarity.
Technically this isn't a Dark Horse. This is a Dark Pegasus.
Anyways, I don't want to harp on it too much. I just was curious to get your opinion because I saw Kristen rebranded. And actually, Kristen's new logo, the funny thing is I thought the KT was pretty fun. The new logo is solid. What I really like about it, though, is they were able to use it and make it into these different patterns for her clothing that looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen, man, she's ahead of the curve. They had, like, on the website, they had this giant picture of, like, I guess it was the Estonian airport and this big video billboard with her on it. And I was like, man, Kristen Sitar in Estonia is like Tom Cruise in this United States. It's unreal.
That's funny.
Anyways, that's all we have for you this week. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode of Grip Locked. Next week, I'm going to be on vacation. Hunter and I are doing a little flippity flop. It'll probably be a similar style. Bringing me in for the video call to recap the Beaver State Fling. Make sure to tune in this Thursday for the preview show of the Beaver State Fling.
This will be one that is particularly worth watching, both preview show and grip locked wise, because it's a course that we've been to. Like we could have more insight on what's going on because we know the course very well. Sometimes we were out there for like 7 hours.
I know, it's funny. It's like when you just said that, I was like, huh? I forgot that happened.
And then as soon as you remembered it, you're like, oh, I remember every single part of that course because we were out there so long.
Yeah, there's you guys don't even know about the secret volcanic water spot. Damn. Oh, you don't know about that?
Well, unless you follow my Instagram.
That's true. Plug. There's a secret volcanic water spot. Let me know if you guys go there. Bring some back for me. Delicious. Absolutely delicious. Anyways, I digress. We'll see you Thursday. Be there, be square.